Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. It is finally September 1, which means we are so close to football season. And today is the AFC. We're going to look in a deep dive into the AFC and more specifically, the AFC East. But I couldn't do that alone. I had to go out and get two guys who I know love this division. So it's not just me here today. Big Rat 310 is back. Phil Nightmare 10 once again is back on the pod. How we feeling today, boys? September 1st. We can taste football now.
I'm stoked. Like, it took a while to get used to the fact that it's coming up. Because, like, as we talked about before, preseason was like a ramp up for us fans. Where, like, we see it little by little and, like, get to appreciate it. This is kind of just like, it's like, oh, wow. Like, it's like next week. It's just like, it hits you kind of all at once.
And yeah, it's like, funny. No one really cares about the preseason in a sense. Outside of, like, you really analyze our teams like we do. But, like, not having the preseason kind of really shows how much, like, you did pay attention. Like, yeah, you didn't care about the outcome, but you did like to watch, because then it felt like football was back. So it's going to just, like, hit us like a brick when it comes, because it's like Thursday, oh, we got the Chiefs game, because there's no lead-in, no games. You're barely seeing any practice, a little clips here and there. So even, like, I found myself, I'll see one throw from Cam or one play on the Patriots, and it's exciting me, just because you don't get, like, this is the only information I have. So, you know, based on last season, but you know Big Rat and Griff as well, things changed dramatically, I can't say the word, apparently. Dramatically, I guess is the word I'm trying to say, over the course of one season to the next. So, and preseason a lot usually kind of gives you a little bit of a head to that as well. So, it's crazy, but...
It is crazy, but it's, and the same thing too, feel like I agree. You either see, like, a quick video clip, or it's just, like, a simple, like, set of tweets from, like, a beat writer saying, like, oh, hey, this person looked good in practice today, or this person did this, or, like, these defensive players had a few interceptions, and then, like, stuff like that. Like, even to, it's just, come next week, you're going to really see who's been putting in the work all training camp versus those guys who may have taken their foot off the gas a bit. And we do have a couple, well, not a couple of those situations, but we got some free agents we'll talk about, we'll get into in a bit. But on one note, Kansas City actually did get their rings tonight. I don't know if you guys had the chance to see or look at them yet.
Yeah, I just watched that, yeah.
Yeah. They look okay. That's just my only flaw with them is I wish the World Champions was in silver, too. Like, you know how Phil and I can talk from experience how the Patriots rings, it's all one color, minus the logo.
That's such a low blow, Griff. Yeah. That was such a low blow to Big Red.
Your fan base just wins so many Super Bowls that you have this, like, great knowledge that I would have.
I know, like,
seen a Super Bowl. Yeah.
The one thing I do have to say that I love, though, is that next, because on the inside of the ring, they put who they played and then the score. But in brackets underneath the score, they put how much they were down to by that team. So there's a 24 under Houston and a 10 and a 10 under Tennessee and San Francisco. And I'm like, oh, God, I love it when they troll like that. Like how when the Super Bowl 51 rings had 283 diamonds.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that.
I mean, my only problem with the ring is it's got the wrong team on it. So, Mahomes is a beast. I can, you know, yeah. But we've talked ad nauseum about what happened with him and that team.
But I might as well get right into it. Talk about our divisions, guys. I've said this again and again to both of you. Man, it's a Pandora's box here for, I would say, who is going to win the division. Like, I think you guys still agree with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I we'll get into this. I'm kind of lower on the Dolphins ceiling than I think I was. I mean, I was kind of negative on them generally, but, like, I especially, like, have a hard time seeing them winning this division. But I definitely agree with all the other teams. Like, I just think the Patriots and the Bills, like, the presumptive favorites, they both just also have low floors. Like, they both could go less than 8-8, theoretically. So that's what makes it fun and exciting for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly not expecting anything from the Jets. Call me a hater. I just don't think the Jets are going to do anything, and Danny's going to hate me for saying that. But prove me wrong. That's all I can say. But I mean, obviously the Dolphins are probably still going to finish last in the division, but unless Tua is just that good, I mean, it could happen. I mean, he did at one point look that way. So, but as we know, Big Red knows and has talked multiple times, quarterback's not everything. So they got to have other elements to be able to do it. But it is the most interesting year in the AFC East for quite some time, and I will say that because you still, even though you got Belichick, you still got to you got to perform and see how it goes. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I think this could be a year. You get a lot of maybe closer games than normal between the division. I mean, you get that anyway, no matter how good the teams are. But I think you might get that a little more this year.
And that's why, honestly, I love the fact that week one we're going to see the Jets play the Bills and the Patriots play the Dolphins. Is just no, I'm just saying that because, like, look, in this weird year, not only for whatever else is going on, but for the fact, too, that the AFC East for the first time in, gosh, probably 15-plus years is unpredictable, minus the year Brady tore his ACL. So let's say, for the first time in 12 years, the AFC East is unpredictable. The fact that we get two division matchups week one, each team, even though they're going to be different from last year, right away they're going to know how to feel each other out. So it may not take as long as, say, like Cincinnati's playing LA, which those are two teams that never play each other. The two teams that play each other all the time, I could also see either game going to either team. Like, I could see, like, Miami beating New England beats Miami, Buffalo beats New York, or New York beats Buffalo. Because if we look back to last year's week one opener, the Jets had a 16-0 lead on the Bills for the longest time in that game. And then the Bills ultimately came back and won it.
Well, I think so, too. Week one, and you guys would agree with this, too. Like, if we look back at week one, my memory doesn't work as well as y'all's probably does. But week one of last season, I can guarantee you some things happened in week one that you're like, well, how did that team get a win? So I think that can happen. And also, the AFC East is, like I said, going to be, should be anyways. If they're not, then that's on them. But I think the Dolphins are going to be more inclined to try to beat the Patriots because they like, you know, this is our chance. We could start off strong and prove something, against the Pats in week one. And I think same thing with the Jets and the Bills. You know, the Bills made the playoffs. Jets can prove that they're better than them. You know, so there's a lot in those two games, like you said. And I think, I don't think you should write into a lot of that either because I think the Dolphins could beat us and I wouldn't be shocked that they beat us. But I don't think that means anything for the Dolphins. Does that make sense? Like, not knocking on your Dolphins, but I think a win wouldn't really mean, oh, the Dolphins are here. It's just week one. Like, we got to see what, and especially no preseason, that could just affect, a lot of teams. And I know, obviously, people think that the Pats with Belichick would be the most prepared, but, sometimes other teams are able to just use their athletics and the talents that they have in week one, and then they falter because they don't have the coaching to hold it up later in the year, but... and the Dolphins have actually done that recently. They kind of had on a little run and then just, we suck, my bad. Let's step back, Like, the Bills have done the same thing, too, so.
Yeah, I mean, in 2016, the Falcons, the team that went to the Super Bowl and aforementioned Super Bowl 51, in week one, they lost at home to the Bucs. And, at the time, people, read a lot into that. Like, oh, the Bucs are on the rise, Jameis' second year, the Falcons are kind of stagnating under Quinn, all this and that. And then that team ended up going to the Super Bowl. And the Bucs, didn't even make the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, that just goes to show that that's the example that most – and that was also a division game. So that's one that most immediately comes to mind of a result that just wasn't at all predictive of what happens next. It's – I said hot takes when Griff talked about this because it's just like Phil said, I just feel like all the – because there's so much uncertainty, everyone's going to kind of create a hierarchy after week one. And it's going, people are going to, get a little emotional. Now, last year did tell us something. It did kind of tell us, hey, the Bills can beat them on the road. The Bills might actually be the better team this year, even though they both kind of have shaky quarterback situations. And that ended up happening, of course. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm pumped. I'm excited for those two games.
I actually do have another quick example of, because you reminded me of Tampa. I remember 2 years ago, week one, the Bucs went into the Superdome and beat the Saints, and Fitzpatrick put up 48 on them, and then everyone right away was looking into it as, oh, Fitzmagic is here. Well, speaking of the Devils, he's your quarterback. But just just little things like that. There's all these weird week one wins where you're like, oh, how did this happen? But then the team, loses a few straight. I think it happened a few years, too, with the, what was it? Frank Reich's first year, I think the Colts went 0-2, and then they just went on this miraculous run, and then they ended up making it to the divisional round of the playoffs versus Kansas City. So like, even though it's you, every win or every game does matter in the NFL, if you lose, win or lose week one, it doesn't dictate your season. Unless, like, last year, for example, which this may be a little bit of a low blow to Big Rap, but, like, when the Dolphins lost to Dolphins lost the Ravens. But the one thing I actually did find out today from Peter King is that the Dolphins had a better record since from Halloween to the end of the season than the Patriots did.
Yeah, they did. They went 5-4 in their last 9 games. They did. They played better over the course of the year. But I just think like, I mean, not to go incessantly about the Dolphins, but it's just like they have a lot of turnover from last year. Like, that's what I don't think people realize. Like, they changed OCs, they changed DCs, they changed over pretty much the entire defensive starting lineup. Like, half of the defense is brand new starters now. It's just, there's a lot of change. This is not the same team at all. Like, they're going to be better because it can't be much worse than they were last year. But it's not like they can carry that momentum down the stretch into this year because everything is just so different.
And, didn't Daniel Kilgore retire as well?
Yeah, well, the Dolphins didn't want to bring him back. Oh. Instead, they signed Ted Karras from your Patriots, who's currently going to be the Week 1 starter. Which I'm not super thrilled about, but it is what it is. And I think Kilgore now plays for the Chiefs. Okay. But he was going to retire, but then I think the Chiefs talked him out of it.
I'm going to look into that. You guys can talk about something. I'm going to look quickly into that Kilgore signing. I just thought he retired for a second.
Yeah, another thing, too, I was going to say, too, is, like, the better side of things that you want to be on is you'll take that first week one L if it means in the end you're better. Like, so, yeah. I think there's, and I think, you know, like, the Dolphins, yay, they win week one against the Pats, but if the Pats are rolling by the end of the year, then no one cares about week one anymore. So I think that's a big thing, not in our division, but I think one of the big games that people, I think, are going to overhype is Bucks and Saints week one. It's got to think, it's just, there's a lot going on in that game that is going to be a huge game. I'm not taking that away from that, but in the grand scheme of things, it may not be as big as it really is. And I think the Bucks would actually probably benefit more out of losing. I know people are going to be like, whoa, 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 what does that mean? But I think the Saints winning that game, the Saints are supposed to win. They should win. And so the Bucks coming in and winning would just put too much hype on them. And then, you know, like Big Red said, people would be crowning them Super Bowl champions after week one. So I think that's a good example of, not saying that a win against the Saints wouldn't be big, but I just think, you know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think that like, one thing I learned, like, something, because I think some people know, I did debate in college, and, like, one thing the coach always taught us was the people who win around get the benefit of, like, winning and advancing, and the people who lose get the ability to find out their mistakes faster and fix them faster. Yep. Yep. So, like, when you, because it's just human nature. Like, yeah, the Bucks are going to make mistakes either way, and if they win, in theory, they could still work on them. But it's just, like, you don't focus on them the same way than if you're coming off a loss. And it's, like, it gives you an opportunity to really more thoroughly investigate your errors in order to be better.
And I think a perfect example, and this is a more than a week one kind of scenario, but it goes on in part of this, the Patriots' defense last year. Like, they were really, really good, but they hadn't gotten a true test until it was almost, like, late in the season, so it's almost, not that they couldn't adjust because they adjusted as much as they could, but it's like, had they gotten that test early in the season, the hype wouldn't have been around them, and then maybe they actually could have made that run better in the end, you know, or if we had offense worth a damn, but I'm just saying.
Maybe don't give up a game-winning touchdown drive to Ryan Fitzpatrick to cost you a bye.
Right, so, But no, and that's the case. I mean, you get down the game, you're going. That's what I guess my point does go along with that, with the week one versus playing the Dolphins and it was last week of the season, wasn't it? Last week, right?
Week 17.
Yeah. That is the only Dolphins game they have. Like, they're of course going to play their hearts out. They're going to, of course, it's their last game of the season guaranteed. And of course, to stop the Patriots from getting a bye, which I think in the end probably costs us a playoff win. I mean, I think you get an extra rep. Like, we were one of those teams that probably actually needed it. But, yeah, no, I mean, not that I think we win the Super Bowl, but, I mean, I'm just saying. Like, you know, I mean, but the Dolphins, that's what I'm saying. Like, these later games are going to be important, so you need to learn what you can from those first games, win or lose, but you need to get in order quick because later in the season, you know, at that point, you know, it's do or die.
Yeah, exactly, Phil. You nailed it on the head, just like how, like, it's – like, the game is week 17, but also, too, for the fact that this division, I'm going to say this, too, like, where I would have to say for Florida, I was going to say, for a lot of people that don't know the schedule off by heart, there is a Week 16 Monday Night Football matchup. It's the Patriots and the Bills, which, like, last year was Vikings and Packers in that position. I straight up think whoever wins that Week 16 game is winning the division. But you're right, too, in the sense as well where the Patriots weren't tested early on. Like, this year, they had Miami Week 1, but then Week 2, boom, out to Seattle. And then Week 4, in Kansas City. And then Week 7.
By the Raiders first. No way.
With Raiders week three, but I, like the Raiders, I don't know how much of a that's at home. I'm just saying, though, like the teams that are going to be tested against.
I guess.
Like, not even on the road, but the teams that are going to be tested against. Not knocking on the Raiders or anything. I'm just saying that there's teams better. Like, they play the Seahawks, the Chiefs, and then the 49ers within the first 8 weeks of the season. So, like, those are three true tests off the hop that they're going to have to deal with.
Right, right. And, I mean, it's just, it's you know, you can talk about it over and over again, but it's just, you know, those week one matchups. The biggest thing, Monday morning quarterback, everybody wants to be Monday, you know, the Monday after each week, everybody thinks that they've figured it out, and I think it still takes, you know, a while to go, which is why I've always different. Now, this year will be a little bit different because it's a different, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to it, but it's when the Patriots were like, I think they were 1-2, or when they lost to the Lions, or they were 1-3.
They were 1-2.
They were 1-2, and everybody was all, the Patriots suck, we told you they suck, and I'm like, or they're getting tested early, and we're going to figure it out. And what happened? They figured it out and got down and did a lot better than they should have. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just using that as an example. I'm just saying, like, don't panic. It's like you want it to happen early instead of having it later. So I guess is the point I'm still driving home, is you want that those problems to happen early. Even though, yeah, it sucks because you got everybody else that doesn't know football screaming, the Pats are done, or your team's done, or, you know, whatever. But you know deep down, we're going to figure it out, and we'll get it, you know, or we won't, you know, the same way, but still.
Exactly. I just want to go around the room quickly, and just because, obviously, the two teams that, like, we don't pay too much attention to, we'll get into the Bills in a minute, just for record, so we can go over, before we go over the rest of the conference, we can do just the quick AFC record-wise. What do you guys think the ceiling is for the Jets? Like, how many wins, like, do you think is, like, what's best case and what's worst case for them?
And, like, I what do you think? Because I've made a similar argument on this thing before. It's not that I trust them or anything. It's just that I'm not as low on their median expectation as most people are, because I think that they can win between. I think they. It is in their ceiling. It is in their range of outcomes to go 9-7, 10-6. That does not mean I think it's going to happen a large percentage of the time. Of course, we're talking ceilings here, not most likely outcome. But I just think the vitriol on them is a little too harsh. Like, statistically, over the second half of the season last year, they were a top 15 offense in the league. It's not like they were incapable of scoring all year long. Like, a lot of that was against bad teams, but it's like, you know, like, that's part of the NFL, I think. I just don't think that's too much of an ask. Because I think, an Adam Gase coach team in 2016 went 10-6, that was not that long ago. Like, why do people think it's so impossible? That was literally 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Like, it can happen. I know it'll happen, like, in a very obnoxious way. They'll beat the bad teams, they'll beat the good teams at home by, like, 3 points, and then they'll get crushed on the road against good teams, like, lose by 3 touchdowns. Like, that kind of a, like, squeak, win close, lose big kind of way. Like, one of those teams that makes the, like, the 2017 Bills, that makes the playoffs at 9-7, but with, like, a negative point differential, and you don't really trust them as, like, any sort of threat. But I do think that's in the range of outcomes, because I think is it really that inconceivable that Darnold is, like, the second best quarterback in this division by December? I don't think that's impossible. Like, I really don't. Like, I just don't think that highly of Josh Allen. So when you have the second best quarterback in the division, it gives you a chance. I think that's their ceiling. I think most likely they go, like, 7-9, like they did last year. But I do think that they had a top 10 defense last year. I know they lost Jamal Adams. I don't think losing C.J. Mosley is that big of a deal. They had a top 10 defense without him anyways. So even with losing Adams, it's just, I saw a report that, like, Marcus May is now going to play in the box more, and they actually think that suits his skill set better, being that, like, box safety that Jamal Adams was, rather than being the backline safety. And then they had McDougal playing that role out back, kind of mixing and matching those roles. I think their defense, if their defense is a top 10 defense and the offense is, like, a top 20 offense, it's like that you could squeak by enough to go 10-6. So I do think that's their ceiling, even though I think more often than not, they'll be a bad offense and a mediocre defense, they'll go 7-9.
I do agree with you. I just wanted to look on a quick set, just a quick second here, just to make sure I'm about something. I just wanted to double check that Greg Williams was still the DC in New York, which he is. But you know what, the fact, and also too, the first thing I literally searched his name was Jamal Adams, so you knew there was issues there, but then I feel like you're going to see Greg Williams have a little bit of fun with this defense where, and also too, I couldn't agree with you more about the Jets where, look, it's like every game against the Patriots for like the last conceivable future I remember where it's either they win by 3, they win by 6, or they get their ass kicked by 30. There's no in-between with those two teams. And like that's like all, I feel like all AFC East football when the two teams play each other, it's either a very close game or someone's getting their asses whooped. But, no, you're right. Like, where they, he can kind of, like, work with McDougal. He kind of do that. He's got, even though Jamal Adams, obviously, all-pro player, he doesn't have to worry about dealing with, like, a superstar ego. He's just got a bunch of guys who want to be there and play. And you're right, too, about Mosley, where for a lot of the time last year, Mosley was injured. Like, that's something I think a lot really went unnoticed, because I remember, like, shitting a brick when I found out Mosley was going to the Jets, because I was just like, fuck, this guy, former Bama boy, he can get to the quarterback. I was a little shaky, but then when he was like when he was out and everything, it's kind of like it's a burden lifted off your shoulders. But then now he unfortunately he did opt out like many other players did due to COVID. But yeah, I do agree with you. I do have to say I think they could. Hey, for all we know, the Jets could come out and just ball, and Sam Darnold could have a great year considering he is going into a potential contract year.
He's young too. He's only like 21, 22. Something crazy.
Exactly, and I do think though 6-10 or 7-9 is the realistic expectation. That's what I'll go for if they finish. But a question I have for the both of you is 7-9 enough to keep Adam Gase in New York?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I don't think it is either. I think like Big Red said, that ceiling is what they're looking for. Every NFL team is looking for that ceiling. You know, you get maybe 2 years to figure it out, maybe a little longer. But, yeah, I think the Jets, I mean, they have the talent. I think the key this year will be that offensive line, and they have to get Bell. Bell has to have a better year. Like, he just has to. Like, I was just looking through the schedule last year, just kind of, remembering, you know, what all they did and stuff like that. And I'm looking at, like, Bell, like, never having a 100-yard game. Like, I mean, I'm sure he did at some point, but I don't know what else. I just looked down, their highest rusher is, like, Bell with 60-something yards. And I'm like, what? Like, no, I was like, I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was that bad. Like, so, yeah.
I will say, like, I didn't mean to control, sorry, but I will, in order for my ceiling argument to come true, he does have to play better. He has to be used better. And I'll just say this, like, the Frank Gore thing, I would not laugh at that because I know he didn't look good with the Bills last year. The year before, 2018, he averaged 4.7 yards per carry in Gase's scheme. For whatever reason, I just think he fits that really well. And even though he was really, like, he was dust, you know, in Indianapolis, and he was dust last year with the Bills, I would not be surprised if, like, he on first or second down can get you, like, 5 yards a carry and just, like, gets you, like, is a pretty solid back and, like, looks better than people think. I'm just throwing that out there because I think he's a good point. Well,
that's a good point because I think a lot of people forget that, like, when a running back does well in a good offense and then leaves and then does crappy, but then he's going back to that same offense, they forget about that. They just remember the crappiness. So that's a good point, Big Red. That is good. And I think that could also help Bell. So, I mean, as much as I was hating on the Jets earlier when we first started, I will say that I agree with Big Red. The ceiling is, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they finished 10-6 because I honestly expect the Bills to underachieve way more than anybody thinks because I just think that's the Bills' way to do things. So I think the Jets overachieving wouldn't necessarily shock me. So I think, yeah, 7-9, but their ceiling could definitely be 10-6. I've seen their schedule is not exactly the hardest. Their schedule is mainly going to be depending on some of those teams at the end. What are their seasons looking like? They play the Rams late in the year, they play the Browns, and they have us in the end. So, I mean, I think those are teams that, like, you know, maybe those teams are scrubs at that point, and they need to just need a couple wins to get in the playoffs. So, I think they're on that, like I said, you know, most likely probably 7-9, but they could be 9-7, 10-6 out of, you know, if the Bills also slip. I think that's also a key to it, too. And there's an extra playoff spot. Don't forget that this year.
And also, it's not like they can't do much better than that. Like, I think we all
agree. Right. No, they can't go even 11-5. No, that's not happening.
No, the one thing I did want to point out, though, I just looked at their early schedule. They have the Bills week one, but then week two, they have the Niners coming to town, and then they go to Indianapolis week three. So, a couple early tests to see what this football team is made of. But then, even to save the Niners, like, I don't expect them to win that game, but they go out there making competitive. They're going to be a story where people are going to kind of be like, hey, this Jets team, like, they have nothing to prove, so they can have the shock the world mentality all year long. Like,
and think too, if the Jets start strong early, they were trashed early last year. So if they start good early this year, that's already a good – it's already a different start, so.
Yeah. I will say, though, a big part of it I do think is the fact that they did blow that week one game against the Bills. The fact that they were up big and then they kind of took their foot off the gas and then the Bills came back spoke volumes on how their season went. Just want to move on quickly. I'm going to let Big Rat take over because I think it's time we talk a little 305, a little Miami Dolphins. I just want to say – I don't want to do, like, you can do ceiling if you want to. I want to know what your expectations are for this season.
I think they're going to have the same record as last year, but be a better team. So I said this the first time I came on with you. Last year's team was horrible. I know they went 5-11, and because they beat the Patriots the way they did, and look, I'm not taking that away from them, rightfully. Like, they're viewed as, like, this up-and-coming, like, really energetic, beautiful success story. They were a horrible, horrible football team. I believe Football Outsiders had them as the worst team of the past 10 years. I mean, the fourth worst team in the past 10 years, even though they went 5-11. Because it's just like one of those games they won, they were up 35-12 against the Bengals at home. They blew this 23-point lead in the matter of 5 minutes. They allowed 2 touchdowns in under a minute to the Bengals, the worst team in the league. If that game was in Cincinnati, Cincinnati would have won. And, here's all the success that the Dolphins got. If the Dolphins won that game on a field goal at the last second of overtime. If they lose that game in overtime and the Patriots defense shuts them down the next week, the Dolphins would have had the first pick in the draft. Like, that's how close they were to being the worst team in the league last year. Those very narrow margins, which requires winning a game in overtime and your elite Patriots defense not blowing or Brady not throwing a pick six in Gillette. Like, you know, little things like that is what separated them from the first overall pick. So I just think they were very bad last year, and I just think, kind of like what me and Griffith said before, it's hard to go from, like, bad to great, like, quickly. Like, it just takes time, especially since they don't have a lot of continuity. They're completely changing the offense. They're changing the entire starting lineup of the defense. Like, almost the entire starting lineup is going to be different with the exception of just Jerome Baker and Eric Rowe, really. Like, Bobby McCain didn't play the second half of last year. Xavier Howard barely played last year. They just traded Raekwon McMillan. They cut all of their edge rushers from last year. They thought they all sucked and literally cut all of them, or they're still on the team but are not going to play. Like, Vince Beagle, like, led the team in sacks last year, and then he tore his Achilles. It's just, like, it's just a completely different team. And I just think that they're... quarterback situation, I'm a very big Tua fan. I really wanted them to take him. I loved him coming out. Like, I'm a huge fan of his. I just think a good rule of thumb is bet on rookie quarterbacks to struggle. Not everyone is Kyler Murray. Like, it's just it's the exception rather than the rule. More often than not, rookie quarterbacks are not that good. Like, Wentz was not good as a rookie. Jared Goff was not good as a rookie. Mahomes didn't even play as a rookie. Mitchell Trubisky was, generally, but... I just think,
and to that point, before you finish that, the people that did do well, Winston and Mariota, look where they're at now.
Exactly.
So can't weigh a lot on that, even if they do have a good rookie season. So
I think so. Like, most people seem to think, like, okay, Fitz, like, will crash back to earth, and then Tua will take over, and then we'll see how they do with Tua. It's just, I just think in the COVID offseason with no OTAs, with no preseason games, I think this is the year where you especially don't predict rookie quarterbacks to lead teams to, like, a 10-6 record. I think it's unlikely generally. I think it's especially unlikely this year. So I kind of have them finishing 5-11, the defense playing better, but them still kind of figuring themselves out. And then I expect them to rebound more in 2021.
So do you start, if it's up to you, not what you think they're going to do. Well, you can say both if you want, but... would you start Fitz week one, or would you start Tua?
I would start Fitz. I think Belichick is fucking, like, what
yeah, don't give Tua that. I agree, exactly.
It's not just the win-loss records either. I've seen, like, the number, like, Belichick against rookie quarterbacks in Gillette. It's like a bloodbath. Like, he just absolutely destroys them. So, no, I'd much rather give him time to get adjusted. I personally, because there's some speculation that Fitz might not play week one. Because unfortunately his mother just passed away. And if he doesn't, I would rather just throw Rosen in there as, like, a sacrificial lamb. Like, sorry, Josh, here, like, we really don't want to play two in this game. And also, week three, they play the Jaguars on the road on Thursday Night Football. That's also not a really conducive first start for a rookie. Week two, they play they're at home, but they play the Bills defense. I would wait until October.
There's no rush, too. I mean, this is your franchise on the line. Like,
Yeah, and there's no expectations.
It's not there's literally none. Like, it's not like you're not expecting to make the playoffs, so therefore you're expecting to get a high pick. So throwing two out there week one, when you're not going to get make the playoffs anyway, like...
No, yes. With Stephon Gilmore and...
It'd be a very Dolphin thing to do. Like, don't do that. Like, if you want to be different, you need to stick with Fitz. And then, like, maybe, like, okay, yeah. I don't know. I would say maybe, like, you know, once your season is technically already over, then throw in Tua so he can get some reps. The games mean nothing. He maybe even can get a spark and have, like, a 3-4 game win streak. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo is a good example. The Niners did that. So it's like, you know, that could be a very good thing for Tua, I think.
I could see them kind of like what they did last year, but actually being a better team. I could see them like starting out like 0-7, making a little December run, you know, and then kind of finishing the year in a very similar place to where they already were. I hope I'm wrong. I just, maybe the defense is going to magically just be really good in one off season. It just seems unlikely. Like, there's camp reports. The camp reports right now have the defense destroying the offense in scrimmage. That to me just says a lot more about how bad the offense is right now than it does on the defense. I just have a hard time trusting it. Like, I understand that, like, some of these players, like Flores, like a lot of these guys, they bring in players that know the system. Like, he did the Patriots thing. He brought in Kyle Van Noy. He brought in Landon Roberts. But Landon Roberts is going to start, by the way. Like, that's why they traded Raekwon McMillan. Unbelievably. I'm stunned. But Kyle Van Noy and Landon Roberts and all the practice squad guys from the Patriots, like, I think Nate Brooks that he, like, brought in at the end of last year. And I believe Kamu Grigier-Hill came from New England, too. Like, it's just, the argument would be they're his guys, so they can adjust better than other free agents could. But there's still too much turnover everywhere else with, they're bringing in Shaq Lawson, Emmanuel Ogba, and Byron Jones. And all three of those guys are playing big roles. Those are your two starting edge rushers and your starting cornerback. Like, they're not from Flores' system. They don't have that familiarity. So why would they just all of a sudden seamlessly fit in with no problem with only 14 training camp practices? I have a hard time seeing it.
No, that's a good – and I think the key, too, is from what I'm talking about with the quarterback situation, at least, is that you have teams that know they're not going to win now, or teams that know that they only have their only choice is to win now. Like, you can count – maybe that's not the best way of wording it, but I think the organizations – like, you see, like if the Browns would just slowly build their team, no, the Browns always seem to just – let's throw everything out there, and then, oh, it doesn't work. Well, of course, you didn't piece it all together. But then you see the Rams, and I know the Rams kind of fell off. But the Rams did that. The Rams slowly built that team to being a contender. Now, it didn't stay a contender very long, but maybe they're just having a rough couple years. I don't know. But, like, that's what I loved. Like, I mean, obviously, you could say McVay got a little exposed as well, too. But yeah, I think that those teams, like, I would much rather see a team build to that and get a chance at it. And if...
I think we lost.
Oh, are we good?
He's back now.
Okay, all right.
You froze for a second.
Black on me. Okay. But yeah, like I think it's you can tell a team's mentality is what I'm getting at, I guess.
Yeah, I got you.
No, I got you too.
And that's what I was saying if Tua starts week one, you can tell the Dolphins are just trying to like hope for a prayer and they're not caring about their future, which have done in the past, but I don't think the Dolphins would do that with Tua. I just can't imagine they would do that.
Neither do I. The one thing I do like though is the fact that the Dolphins, I looked at their schedule too, like, because I was going to mention the Jacksonville game, but then also too how they have Seattle and San Francisco right away, like kind of a couple just like early tests, not to see like it's like the same thing too, like I was saying with the Jets, like if I had to pick the opponents, sorry Big Rap, but I'd probably pick Seattle and San Francisco to win those games, but sure, they're good feeler games to see where this team is at and like how they can evaluate going forward.
Yeah, they're going to get tested early. I mean, they have some legit teams coming to Hard Rock this year. They're going to have the Chiefs coming to town. They're going to have the Seahawks coming to town. Like, they got some good stuff early. Like, week two, they play the Bills. And Josh Allen has, as much as I criticize him, he's, like, absolutely destroyed the Dolphins. We've played them four times. All four times, he went off. Like, it was ridiculous. So, like, just, like, making him have a bad game, like Belichick always seems to do, like other coaches around the league always seem to do. But Brian Flores, this supposed defensive genius, I would like to see Josh Allen rip us up week two, even though it is just week two. That would be a good test to show me that the defense is progressing in a different direction.
I was going to say, too, I love how you guys have week 10 against the Jets, and then your bye, and then you go to New York. I just love that. It's just so weird and unorthodox, but it's just cool.
Both teams, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they have a buy-in between two. Okay.
Yeah,
it's almost like a series in baseball, or like an NBA playoff series. It's just like, okay, like we're gonna play this team a lot over the course of the next few weeks, and like you kind of adjust everything around that. It's fun. It's fun. I'm excited for it. The end result is probably that they each go 1-1 against each other, like more often than not. I'm guessing.
Yeah, each game is decided by like a field goal or like a critical fourth down stoppage with like 2 minutes to go, like right after the 2 minute warning. Next up is the team that Big Rat not loves to criticize, but is a little hard on, and that is the Buffalo Bills, a team that I have a personal vendetta. I don't have a vendetta against the team, I just have a vendetta against the fans. The one thing I quickly want to say about this team is because I remember early on in the year how everyone was saying the whole Brady thing about the teams they were going to play, and how, oh, they have to play the Chiefs, and they have to play these guys. The Bills got to play the same teams. Like, week three, they got the Rams coming to town. Then they got a big spot against the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football with them coming into Buffalo. And then the other big spot I see here on the schedule, at San Francisco, week 13 on Monday Night Football. And then also, too, they got the Steelers week 14 at home Sunday Night Football. Probably the first Sunday Night home football game for the Buffalo Bills in God knows how long. But when I see things like that, I'm just like, when people start like saying, oh, hey, they're going to be the better team, they're going to win, I just want to go pump the brakes, because I'm not saying they're going to be bad, but to me, I feel like Buffalo's getting that, like, overly, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having a brain fart here. They're getting that overhype that Cleveland got in 2019, where everyone's expecting them just to go and run through and win, like, 12 games, when in reality, they're going to get a reality check where they're against one of those teams where they're going to get their asses kicked, and everyone's going to realize, hey, this team is not as good as we once thought.
I have been hard on them. I will say, like, I recognize they have a higher ceiling than the Jets and the Dolphins. Like, I know that. Like, I know that they have a chance to win double-digit games, whereas those other teams maybe don't. The fun part is just that they have a low floor. Like, that's what it is. Like, they have a low floor. Like, if Allen implodes, kind of like the 2018 Jags coming off the conference championship year where Blake Bortles just kind of falls apart. The defense was still good that year. So people don't realize the defense was still very good. Blake Bortles fell apart. They went 5-11. Like, that could happen. Like, it's just, he's very scattershot that way. It's kind of a reflection of Josh Allen. Like, you don't really know what's going to happen, which kind of represents the whole team. You don't really know, like, whether or not they can go 12-4, whether or not they can go 6-10.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is the last we saw of Josh Allen, he looked utterly horrible. The man was giving the game away to the Texans, literally giving it to him, and of course the Texans were taking it like, oh no, you can have it. And so that game, if I remember, is a hot mess. But no, it's like, I can only go back to the last thing that I saw, and I did not see anything to give me any worry about Josh Allen and the Bills. Now, he will have a weapon in Diggs, and since Josh Allen is known for launching it up, I mean, that's, I guess, a plus for him. Maybe you have more of a security blanket there, but I don't think that scares me enough to think the Bills are guaranteed. Like, and like you said, they do have the highest ceiling out of, you know, the Jets or the Dolphins, but and they have more, you know, continuity than you even say against even the Pats, but I just don't trust them. I never trust the Bills. I think they're the Bills. They're always going to bill until they don't anymore. You know, it's like, I can always fall on that until I get proven wrong. So it's like, you know, I don't know. I just don't, like I said, unless they adapt and they do well and like, you know, they looked good early in the season last year. Looking good early in the season isn't going to prove anything to me. Let me see what they look like in the second half of the season. Like because they just always seem to be worse in the second half. To me.
I do agree with you. And the other point I just want to make out quickly, I'm looking at their schedule. Another week 11 bye, so that only leaves the three of the four AFC East teams have their bye the same week. The only one who doesn't is the Patriots, who have it very early this year, week 6. I just wanted to, before we talk about the Patriots, I just want to point that out, because Patriots usually have a November bye. Another example I quickly want to give of teams who get off to a hot start who just falter, like how Big Rat was referring to the Jaguars in 28 Jaguars. I remember in 2018, week 2, they really dominated the Patriots, and everyone thought, okay, this is the same team as last year, AFC Championship game again, and then the wheels fall off. So, like, if they go out there and beat the Jets and the Dolphins and go 2-0 right away, and the Patriots, say if they, because if I had to pick right now, I don't think the Patriots are going to win the Week 2 game in Seattle, just because even though without fans, that still is a very tough place to play. And Seattle, I will concede to the fact that Seattle is a much better team this year than the New England Patriots are. Just defense is a little suspect. You know, they have Adams now. If they go 2-0, everyone's going to assume right away that the Bills are going to run away with this division. That's why I just wanted, that's why I went on my rant earlier about, like, when they have, like, those big spot games, like a Monday Night Football, a Thursday Nighter, and a Sunday Nighter, where everyone's going to think, oh, hey, how do they do against this team? What's it going to be like? And they could get their asses kicked. But then also, too, I think to last year when they went into AT&T Stadium Thanksgiving Day and absolutely demolished the Cowboys. So I agree with you guys where it's a low floor, high ceiling. But it's, this is a very interesting team because I think it can go one of two ways. Like, I agree with both of your takes, both of you guys separately. But if you had to say, like, an honest, not just, like, what the 5-11 or the...
The 5-11 or the 12-4?
Yeah, like, I would have to say, I think their worst-case scenario, even though they could go 5-11, I see their worst-case scenario as, like, 7-9 or 8-8. Like, there's a few games, like, where... Or they could, for all we know, they could be, like, last year's Chargers team where they lose, like... 6 or 7 very close games by a touchdown to, like, okay, teams. Like, I'm pretty sure they chart, like, yeah, everyone remembers that about the LA Chargers last year, where if it weren't for a few games they had lost, that's easily either a playoff team or a bubble playoff team, and they don't have a top 10 pick in the draft. So that's the only point I wanted to make. Well, let's see here. Even two of the Bills, like, yeah, then the Rams, then you have to go, like, they're October. It's tough, but it's only tough because of the travel, because they go to Las Vegas, then they go to Nashville, then they go to New York, which, obviously, there's no fans this year, but when you got to travel a lot, it doesn't play out in your favor when you got to travel that much in a very close time frame.
Yeah, the travel, I think, like, with the NBA playoffs, like, one thing people are talking about, like, why, because, like, everyone's kind of shooting the lights out, like, the offensive ratings are through the roof for, like, every team. And one theory posited is that the lack of travel in between games is making an impact. Like, we're underestimating how that can kind of degrade athletes' bodies. You know, the travel, the exhaustion, the fatigue, the lack of sleep, that maybe these people are just more refreshed, and that's why they're shooting so much better. If you apply that to football, even with no fans, the harm of traveling to and from, especially, like, that's the thing, like, with the, I think we talked earlier about the Jets or the Patriots-Seahawks game or the Jets-49ers game, that's cross-country travel. Like, that's not minor travel. I can totally see how that can make a team perform worse on the road, even if, like, there's no yelling from the fans in the stands, sort of, so to speak.
One example I want to give to that is 2 years ago, there was a Thursday night football game, Vikings and Rams in Los Angeles, and I remember the Vikings were pissed because usually you know how teams will travel the day before the game about, let's say, anywhere from, like, 24 to 30 hours prior to kickoff, or sometimes in the case it's, like, 24 hours they fly. I remember the Vikings had to leave, like, they played Sunday, had to practice Monday, Tuesday. Actually, not to mention, I just remembered, the Sunday was the game that they got their asses kicked by the Bills, and then they had to practice Monday, practice Tuesday, get on a plane, go cross-country. Then I remember that game, they got their asses kicked. I remember Mike Zimmer complaining the whole week, basically thinking, we're going to lose because we're losing all this time, because we have to not only travel on a short week, you got to travel to the other side of the country. So travel's a big, big factor in sports. And, like, oh, people realize, oh, you get tired, he's a professional athlete. When you gotta hop on a plane and then put your body on the line like that for 3 hours, it's gonna affect you.
No, yeah, and what Big Rat was saying, like, with traveling, like, even though there's no fans, like, there's no preseason season. You had no travel before you even started the season. And it's like the one benefit even more this year to a home field advantage is that you got to prepare this week. You didn't have to do anything extra. And it's like, who knows what the travel burdens are going to be when you travel and have to, like, they put you in a, like, in a sense, like a bubble there probably, you know, because it's like of all COVID and stuff that's going on. And you don't know, maybe they do their requirements different in that stadium than you do. And so now you're like, well, this is how we do it. And it just throws your game off. And so that's going to be in your head. Not saying it will affect every game, but it could affect certain games for sure.
And one point I want to make, because I want Big Red to answer upon this, but I honestly have heard stories of why Miami can win more games at home than they do on the road, is because when a lot of teams get to South Beach, they kind of feel like, hey, we're on vacation, we're going to relax a little bit, and then they're like, oh shit, we got to play a football game tomorrow, and then that's when they kind of like lose, because like South Beach kind of has that like easygoing vibe, like where players kind of let their guard down for 24 hours. Like, would you not agree with that, Big Red?
Well, yeah, and I mean, and they go to bars too. I mean, like,
yeah, that too. That too.
The nightlife. We have a phrase for it down here. It's called the South Beach Flu. And yeah. I've seen, like, there was one Saturday night, like a few years ago, I think it was 2015 or 2016. No, it was 2016, where I was hanging out with a friend of mine, like at this little restaurant that has like an outdoor bar and dining area. And I see, like, Jeremy Curley of the 49ers, like, the day before we play them on Sunday in Hard Rock Stadium. And he's, like, ordering drinks and, like, doing all this stuff, like, with his friends. And they went out into the night. And it was just like, yeah, I can imagine stuff like this is pretty common. It's the South Beach lifestyle. But it's also the heat is the big one, especially in September and October. Teams don't handle the heat. It is hot down here. But, like, people think, like, oh, it's hot, like how LA is hot. No, it's not. The air down here is way more humid than it is over there. And, like, it's heavier. It weighs on you. The heat affects you. Like, 100 degrees down here is very different than 100 degrees in other parts of the country. And, like, Brian Flores even said in a presser this week that Byron Jones is not practicing well because he's not adjusted to the South Florida heat. And that's, I mean, we gave him $82 million. You'd hope that he can get over that. Because that, especially, like, God, a cornerback, like, getting exhausted and tired in a September home game, I mean, that's a big problem. But yeah, the heat, the nightlife, and the heat are the two big things. South Beach Flu, as it's termed down here.
That's the thing I was looking for. That's why I smiled right away as you said the South Beach Flu. What was the only thing I was going to say? Quickly, though, if I did have to predict a record for the Bills, I'm going to go 9-7. I'm going to say 9-7. I for as much as I'd love to see them go 11-5, and also that's the other thing I want to point out, that week 2 Patriots loss in Jacksonville, I remember it was the same thing. It was like 105 or 110 degrees that day. Like, it was very, very hot, and like they got flustered by the heat quickly. So yeah, that you are right. That is one thing. The Florida humidity is another thing. That's why I love it when the Patriots don't go down there until like December. So it's like actually somewhat decent. It's not like...
It's part of why we have some good luck against the Patriots down here. Like, they, like, when in December is a different animal, but like when we played them, like, the first week of September in 2014, the year that you guys won the Super Bowl against the Seahawks, that week 1, we beat the Patriots in Miami by a lot. We beat them by like 15. Like, and the South Florida humidity definitely part of it.
I think I remember that game. I think we were up like 20-10 at the half, and then like the heat caught up to us in the second half, and then you guys just took over. I think it was like 34-20 or something like that.
That was the only game Sean Marino played for the Dolphins that year. And he played really, really well, got hurt, and then never came back.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was very Dolphins-like. You say 9-7. I mean, I think their floor is a little bit lower than you give it credit for, because I think Allen could implode. But I think more often than not, I'm going to predict they go 7-9, is my guess. I just think it's very likely Josh Allen is going to struggle. Like, it's just like, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm overreacting to that Texans game, but I just think it's.
I'm with you.
No one predicted that Jags team to go 6-10. Like, most people had them as like a 12-4 kind of team. You know, the Bears last year, another one. Like, maybe not 12-4, but people thought that team would be a playoff team again, and they kind of fell back to earth at 8-8. I don't know. They seem to fit that mold like so cleanly that I'm not just gonna say, oh, like they could falter. We all recognize they have a low floor. I'm gonna actively predict it. 7-9.
Which is funny because it's literally before you said that. I promise, viewers, that's, or listeners, that's what I was thinking. I was gonna say 8-8. So we're all quirky, literally in a row. He had 9-7. I didn't know Big Red. I did hear Griffin. I already was leaning towards 9-7 or 8-8, and I'm actually going to go 8-8. I just don't like the Bills. Prove me wrong, Bills, and I will come on here and gladly say how wrong I could have been. But I just think 8-8. I just don't think Jones. I mean, not Jones. Where am I getting Jones from? I just don't think Allen's the guy. I just I think he's going to get even more. And another year, he's going to be even more exposed. That's another thing. Maybe some of the success he had was able, because he was able to throw, you know, now that people know that he wants to throw deep, they can cover that, and, you know, so.
And the last thing I'll say on this is if they want to go, if they want to be like that 12-4 kind of team, like they do have to beat the Patriots once. And that means beating Bill Belichick's defense. And Bill Belichick seems to have, I mean, Allen plays horrible against the Patriots every single time. I just, like, you got to play well against them if you want.
No, he's right.
I just don't know if I can trust him to do that, so.
Well, last year he got trucked against, I forget the player, I think it may have been Patrick Chung, week four, just demolished him. And that game, too, that was a 16-10 dogfight that almost had Matt Barkley charging down the field. So that was a little thing. But then there was the game, too, that was December 21st, the Saturday night game that the Patriots had to win the division when their defense kind of, like, mattered. And that's the one thing, too, with the Bills. I know they have this good up-and-coming defense, but I want to see them make a big, like, say, for example, if they're in a close game, that week six game against Kansas City, if they're in it late, I want to see the Bills' defense come up with a big play. Like, say if it's like 20-17 for them and Patrick Mahomes is charging down the field, I want to see if their defense can hold up against a good playoff team, especially the Kansas City Chiefs. You're probably going to hate this, but last team on the list is the New England Patriots going for, I don't know how many time of back-to-back-to-back, probably like their 11th or 12th straight AFC East title. Phil, I'm going to let you take this one. Like, I let Big Rat take the Dolphins, and we'll go from there and see how we all feel about this team going into 2020.
Well, I've been on the train from day one, okay, about this season after last season. I said, the hype, you can hype the Bills all you want. I go back based off of history. I know players change. Players change every year, okay? If you can't use the player change argument when the Pats continue to win, okay? It's the organization. It's the organization that's getting it done. I mean, the players have a lot to do with it. I'm not saying that. But I'm going to stick to what I've always said. It's like the Pats know how to win this division. You know, the only time they didn't win was without Brady. True. But they still went 11-5, and the Dolphins had a good year that year, not taking anything away from the Dolphins. But, like, it's still a rarity. And so, like, we got the Bills who think everybody automatically, it's because they made the playoffs, thinks, oh, well, Brady leaves town. Now this is the time the Bills are going to take over and win the division. Not so fast. Because I think there is a lot of unknown. And honest to God, everybody's focused on the offense. That's not my biggest worry at all. I'm not worried nearly as much of Newton than I am about the defense without Hightower. Hightower sitting out is huge, is massive for this team. And I can point to the prime example because Brady would probably have 7 championships, the Patriots as well, had Hightower been in that Eagles game. So, I mean, it's just different. I mean, it's just different when he's on the field. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he is. But even that being said, I think Cam's got a lot to prove. I like what I've seen so far. I mean, I still have my reservations because, I mean, I personally even came on here and said I didn't want Newton if it was up to me. Of course, I didn't think we were going to get him at that steal of a deal, so of course I'll take that. But Newton's got a lot to prove, and if he doesn't prove it, guess what? We're back with Stenham, and Newton's, you know, career's over. So, I mean, it's just that simple. So, I mean, I think this is – I can't imagine because of the type of player Newton is. Obviously he gets hurt, he can't really help that. But if he doesn't get hurt, I just can't imagine Newton's not going to be good enough to take this team to the where it needs to be. And just the bottom line is this: the offensive weapons aren't as good as they've been in the past. Brady was not going to be the guy, and Big Rex is going to smile from ear to ear when I said this. But the reason why Brady had to go get weapons is because he had nothing, and he knows he needs weapons now. So, at his age, and he does, he needs weapons to make it happen. I am somewhat still mad that we didn't get him those weapons because he is my goat. He will always still be the goat to me. But, bottom line is, the offense has to be better because I do think I'm really high on N'Keal Harry this year. I think he's going to be really well, do really well. And the, like we were talking about earlier, seeing little clips, seeing Newton throw touchdowns to him is great because I think that's a key to the offense. Like, Edelman can't be the only guy there, and who knows how much longer Edelman's going to be there. Because maybe we have to go out and get a top receiver and don't want to pay Edelman. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, and I think think Edelman's going to be huge if he can stay healthy, but I think Edelman not having a lot in the offense would only make it better because this, Newton's can, you know, spread the field around. And I don't want Newton running all the time, but it still gives that element. You have to guard Newton from running because if you don't, I mean, you're going to give him wide open area to run. He's going to take his 20 yards, go out of bounds, and that's something we would never get with Brady, right? Outside of the one chance they decide, okay, well, we're going to risk it. We'll let Brady run 15 yards all he wants because it's never happening again. You know, you'll see one. You know, you'll see one here and there. But like, but with Newton, you can't allow that because he could do it over and over again. And then when you don't, then when you don't attest for it, that's when he's going to get you, and he's going to get you for way worse than Brady ever could. So I think the optimist, you know, the ceiling is very, very high with the Pats. I think I would not be shocked if we won 12 or 13 games. Do I think we will? I don't know. I mean, I think there's, you know, it's, I just think there's some unknowns there with, like I said, no Hightower. How does this defense step up? I think I'm looking at his autograph card that I just picked up not too long ago, but Chase Winovich is going to be a huge guy in our defense, and hoping he can step up. And of course, we still have Gilmore. I'm not really too worried about the secondary as much as I am, you know, just the missing, not having Hightower. But I still think we win this division, and I think we win it. You know, I think we at least win. You know, I think our low is 10. I think 10 wins. I mean, Newton gets hurt, then we talk about that when it happens. But I'm obviously not going to assume Newton's getting hurt. But if he does get hurt, then that'll be something we have to address. But I think we easily go 10-6 at least, and that wins the division, especially based on what the records we've already said. So, I will say this before we go even further. I know we're just talking about the division. I don't see this is a team that's going to have to prove to me that they can go to the Super Bowl, because I still think it's Chiefs or bust. I don't see anybody else that can beat them right now. Even though I do think the Chiefs will struggle just as much, because going back to the Super Bowl is hard to do. The Pats are the only ones that have done it recently, and they didn't win it back-to-back. So, and the same thing with Seattle was the last team to do it. They didn't win it back-to-back, but they got there. So I mean, I think it's tough to do. So, I mean, I think they're going to struggle as well. So I'm not saying that, but I just think on paper, I don't see a reason why the Chiefs would lose. But we see things happen. I mean, so much can happen. So,
Big Rat, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a me and Phil have talked about this in years past, where I always told them, the day Brady leaves the Patriots, I will be the biggest Patriots fan.
He did.
Like, I am very well read on that. I read their practice reports every day. Like, I am, like, a fervent Patriots fan. Well, it's also easier because, like, I don't, like, the Dolphins, like, you guys know how down I am on the Dolphins this year. So it's like, oh, my, it goes against the Dolphins. Like, well, like, I'm kind of not expecting the Dolphins to do a whole lot. I wouldn't mind if they had the worst record in the league, because then you could do what the Niners did, where, like, a middling team, like, has a bad injury and they become, like, one of the worst teams in the league, and they get to add Nick Bosa, like, to what's normally, like, a decently talented team. That's what I would like. You know, if we can just add, like a high-level prospect to this team, it's like, oh, well, now we're talking for 2021, since I don't think this team can make any noise in the postseason. But, yeah, Patriots, I'm a fan. I will say with Newton, there is kind of a middle ground where, like, that I'm, like, based on the camp reports I've read, it seems certainly possible where, what if he's just, like, Buffalo Bills era Tyrod Taylor, where he's mobile and, like, you know, he can, like, throw some checkdowns here and there, but maybe doesn't have the dynamism that he had, like, in Carolina, like, with all the deep shots and stuff like that. Because, like, you know, Tyrod Taylor and another one that comes to mind, Alex Smith. I know Alex Smith is a very boring name to hear, but Alex Smith was very mobile. Alex Smith ran for like 500 yards a year. Like, he was a very mobile quarterback. And someone like Tyrod Taylor, it's not 2015 MVP Cam. It's not Cam last year where he couldn't throw. It's like kind of this like middle ground where you have like a decent quarterback where, hey, I mean, with the quality of your defense, if they can play well without Hightower, maybe that is still, you know, appetizing enough. I have higher expectations than that, of course. I'm just saying, I think that is a kind of middle ground that hasn't really been talked about too much, where he could just kind of be like solid, where he's like a good rusher and can like make some good throws in the short game here and there, but like maybe isn't the kind of guy he was 5 years ago. But it's not that I think Tom Brady isn't one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. It's not that. It's just that I do not like the conversation around his legacy, which is kind of along the lines of, you know, he never had great receivers or anything like that. Look at all the stuff he overcame to win 6 Super Bowls. While that is true, not only does it ignore, you know, having the best tight end of all time and the second best receiver of all time for a few years there too, but I think it also just ignores, like, the organizational benefit of, like, being the Patriots quarterback, of having Bill Belichick make adjustments, having Bill Belichick, like, never make stupid decisions late in games. Like, John Fox, I've said this story before in old YouTube tape shows, like, the 2012 Broncos, the year the Ravens won it all, that team should have won the Super Bowl. That was the best team in the league that year, I thought. And they faced the Ravens before Joe Flacco threw that Hail Mary to Jacoby Jones that everyone remembers. Right before that, the Broncos had the ball, and it was like 3rd and 7 with like a minute left on the clock, and the Ravens had no timeouts. Or a minute and 20 seconds left, the Ravens had no timeouts. They could have just thrown it on 3rd and 7 with one of the best offenses in the league, gotten a first down, and the game's over. And you see that happen a lot more often these days, where it's 3rd down, the other team has no timeouts. You have to decide, do you just run the ball, drain the clock, give them very little time to make a comeback, or do you take the risk at throwing, which would give them time, but if you make the throw, you end the game. And John Fox played it very conservatively, ran the ball up the middle. They punted with 40 seconds left, and then, you know, Joe Flacco did the Hail Mary, and they ended up losing in overtime. If they had the guts to just throw it on 3rd and 7 and get the first down, the game is over because they had no timeouts. You could just take knees. And, like, that's not something that I don't think – like, that's something that I think someone like Belichick, especially if he was the coach of that team, if he had that Peyton Manning Broncos offense that was so explosive, like, I think Belichick doesn't make that decision. And something like that might have cost him a Super Bowl ring, like something small like that.
One great example of that, I'll say, and a lot of people like to talk about the opposite side of it, but Belichick, you can make a big argument. Actually, there's a really big argument that Belichick saved that Super Bowl against Seattle because they knew that play already. They did that play in practice. That was a Belichick call to make sure he knew the player he wanted in the play at the exact same time. And maybe any other scenario, they get that touchdown because no one saw that coming, or they just run the ball. But because you're going up against Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll knew he had to do something different. Just turns out that Belichick already knew he was going to do it. So, I mean, like, already had that figured out because that's how good Belichick is. But that's to your credit, though. I agree, as much as I am 100% pro-Brady, I do think people forget on both sides. Either if you're pro-Belichick, I think you forget how talented Tom Brady is. And I think if you're all the way on Brady, you forget how talented Belichick is. It took both of them to build that organization. I do agree with that.
I understand there's going to be some idiots in the Boston media that if they go like 12-4, like with the clickbaity column, how important really was Tom Brady? Like all that shit's obviously going to be really stupid. Like no one is saying that. It's just that I do kind of want them to succeed without him, just to show people, yes, he did have a lot of help. Help is not just the name of your wide receivers. Like, help is a lot of things. It's an organization. It's coaching. It's a good supporting cast. It's all having continuity. Help comes in many ways.
It is a disgrace that it is. I mean, looking back at it, obviously I was happy during the era, but, you know, because they didn't go that often. But it is a disgrace that a quarterback so good as Peyton Manning got no help from his organization for a long time. Like that, there's no excuse for that team to not have gone more than 2 times. Like,
I mean,
and look, see, that was during Pat's era, but I'm just saying, like, the Peyton's a good example of that.
And like, in the last, and before I finish, just like last example for this, like, you know, Peyton Manning in the 2010 Colts, they faced the Jets in the wild card round, and Jim Caldwell was the head coach. And Jim Caldwell, the Jets were organizing a game winning drive to get a field goal, and for whatever reason, in the middle of the drive, Jim Caldwell called a timeout. Because he, like, wanted to use the timeout to, like, readjust the defense. But the Jets were in a scramble drill. They were like, hurry, 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 hurry. And he called the timeout, which gave them time to stop, reset, come up with a new play. And the Jets ended up kicking a field goal to knock out the Colts that year before the Jets knocked out the Patriots the next week. That's another thing of just, like, not that that team could have won the Super Bowl, but it's just, like, with a better coach who doesn't make that stupid decision in tight in a close game, like, maybe they go farther, maybe they advance further. And that's all I'm saying. Like, I do like this Pats team. I the defense will struggle without Hightower, but I think it might be a thing where, like, they kind of are mediocre to start but then kind of find their groove over time. I really like the young linebackers you guys brought in, not just because I'm a Patriots fan this year. But I've known Josh Uche for a long time. He went to Christopher Columbus High School, which is actually not just in my hometown, but it's actually a rival high school, the high school I went to. So I was a fan of his at Michigan and everything, and I'm hoping he does well in his role with New England. So, yeah, I think they have the best quarterback in the division. They have the best coach in the division. I think they'll go 10-6. I think it's pretty simple.
I want to play one audio clip just because Phil reminded me of the whole with the Malcolm Butler thing, and it involves Brian Flores. Just listen to this. Let me just see if I'll get this stupid thing low. It's taking a while to load, guys. But basically, it's over here. Him saying Malcolm go will always be the greatest Brian Flores soundbite ever when they knew that they wanted to run a three safety set on that goal line stance there. That's the only thing I wanted to say.
It was the greatest play in Super Bowl history. I mean, yeah. I've said that. Like, as much as I cry, like, it pains me. Like, I was nearly in tears when I saw it happen, but it was quite awesome. So, yeah, props to them. I don't know, like, even if I just wanted to finish off with, like, that Tyrod Taylor comparison I brought up. I bring it up because that could be good enough to be the best quarterback in this division. Like, when you're competing with Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and Fitzpatrick, like, even that, while it might be underwhelming as Patriots fans, like, I still think that's more than good enough. So, yeah.
Well, and with the element that you were talking about, we were all talking about, you know, your head coach, Belichick's going to make Newton look better, and Josh McDaniels, for sure, is going to make Newton look better anyway, regardless of how good he is. So I think that's a good thing. Like talent-wise, he may be on, like you're saying, the Tyrod Taylor, well, I can't say it.
Tyrod Taylor spectrum. Level,
but it may look like he's even more, and he's going to, I mean, if the Pats win, of course he's going to be, you know, elevated to the moon. We all know that, but and if he struggles, he's going to be looked at as, you know, a bust or whatever, but, you know, but yeah.
I'm just going to give my quick 2 cents on the Patriots as a whole. From their schedule, I'm going to say they go 11-5. That's me. I do think, though, there is going to be a few games this year where, say, if week two they go to Seattle, and like I said, I already predict that as a loss, but if they go out there and they lose by, like, 20, you're going to see the overreactions of, oh, this or that. Like, I honestly, more than week one Sunday, I am more excited for the Monday after week one, when everyone is going to give overreactions about everything. Like, if the Bucs beat the Saints, it's going to be Bucs are going to the Super Bowl, Brady's doing great in Tampa. Like, but if Brady flounders and doesn't play well in the game and has miscommunication errors, everyone's going to start saying system quarterback is an overreaction. Like, that's just one thing I wanted to say. But I honestly love Big Rat's Tyrod Taylor comparison, because am I expecting 2015 Cam? No, would I love to see it? Absolutely, but I just don't think it's realistic. I do believe last year his rotator cuff wasn't fully healed. I do think it is healed now. The toe-foot situation, we'll see where that goes. But I think we have a Cam who's ready to work hard, who's impressed Bill Belichick. So
yeah.
I think their ceiling is very, very high when it comes to this New England team. Like, they go out there and play well. Like, honestly, they have a nothing-to-lose mentality. Like, this year, it's not like most years where I expect them to, hey, make some noise or make a Super Bowl run. They end up making a Super Bowl run and shocking me, great. If not, as long as they don't flounder out at the end of the year, that's all I care about. Because they do have a bunch more cross-country trips than they normally do, though. Because usually, I think last year, Houston was the furthest west they went. Like, this year, they have to go to Seattle. They play in SoFi Stadium twice. But the thing I love about that is that one game's on a Sunday, and then the next is a Thursday, so they have a short week, so they basically have a full week to themselves out in California. And then, and to the most part, it's just, hey, go out there. That's why I say Pandora's box, because look, anything can happen. I think their floor is 7-9. Like, that's worst case, like, Cam goes down with an injury, Jared Sims playing, because we know Jared Sims has NFL experience, because the only NFL play he ever had was a pick six to Jamal Adams. But if Cam's there and Cam's healthy and Cam can just be average, this is a team I think that will win a division.
And the thing, too, the Big Rat will like this, but a lot of I know a Pats fan I work with that's like death to Brady. So, I mean, I don't think he actually, I told him he's gonna regret those words. And he's like, I know when he comes back, he'll be crying, you know, for the Hall of Fame. But I'm like a different fan. Like, I can't. I've tried. I've had a short window of a day where I'm like, screw Brady. And then I'm like, I can't do it. I just literally can't do it. But I will say, to that credit, though, I will say this. Because I even found myself being hesitant of what Brady could do in the Bucs. And now I've drafted him now in two leagues, so I don't know what's going on. I really think Brady's going to have a good year. But looking at it like that, like, as a Pats fan, like, you know, you were saying, of course, you want Belichick to do better, you know, and to prove, you know, obviously that, you know, that it's a little more him than it was Brady. But, like, to me, like, I want the Patriots to do well. I don't want Tom Brady to struggle. I'm not rooting for Tom Brady to struggle. But, if you know, I can't lie, but a little bit of me, you know, if Tom Brady starts to struggle, I'm be like, yeah, see, it ain't better than grass ain't greener on the other side, is it, Brady? Just a little bit of part of me it will be happy to say that. But honestly, God, and I've said this on here, I'm not ill will to Brady at all. You can come out with all the communication. You can make up a story. I'm seeing that a lot. They're making up stories between Brady and Belichick. Who knows what will ever be real and what's the real story behind that. Maybe we never get it. I don't know. But needless to say, Gronk's the only one that can kiss my behind. Gronk's the only one that can kiss my behind. He's coming back just to ring chase, which is whatever, you know, but he's coming back to play football only because Brady, you know, gave him that little sweet tart call, like, hey, you want to play some football and win championships? But I don't expect Gronk to finish the year either, so maybe that's the pessimist in me too, but.
Gronk should have been at SummerSlam.
He should have, exactly. Gronk should have been at SummerSlam, exactly, so.
I want my dream, like, it won't happen this way for all kinds of reasons, like COVID and all that, but, like, my dream would be, like, I'm in, like, a Boston sports bar with, like, my Cam Newton Patriots jersey, and the Patriots, like, win the Super Bowl this year, and I, like, stand on the table to the Boston crowd and be like, hey, who needs Brady, am I right? And then everyone's like, yeah!
You would love it.
That would be, like, after all the pain I've been through, having to sit through 49, having to sit through 51, having to sit through 53, like, I deserve this. Of just, like, getting to revel with that.
I'll say this, like, it's so, there'd be so many emotions, I don't even know if I could actually come on here and talk about it. If there was Bucks versus Patriots in the Super Bowl, I don't know if I could preview that game. I'd just be like, let's just watch it. I don't even know what I could say. Because there's so many different emotions. Like, obviously, I know where you would want. But, like, me, I'm like, I don't want to see Brady fail. I don't want to see my team. Like, I don't know if Griff gets this as much as me. But I've gotten this question at least once a week. At least once a week. Probably multiple times a week from new people that have seen me. So, are you a Bucks fan or a Pats fan now? Do you see all this merch in here? It's not. Oh, you can't see it because we're on the thing. But you guys can see it because we're talking. I'm a Pats fan, okay? Like, Brady will always be my quarterback, but I knew this was coming at one point. It was bad. It was going to happen, even if it ended well. If he's just like, oh, retired after Super Bowl, which is what I wanted, but of course, you don't always get what you want. So, I knew, so it ended differently. But, no, I'm a Pats fan. It's just, it's now a new Pats fan. It's a new way to watch my Patriots, and we'll see what happens. But that Super Bowl would be, there'd be a lot of pregame. I don't know what, I would be talking like this. I'd be like, I don't know.
don't you think, like, I think you guys saw, like, that presser where Belichick was just, like, saying all these insanely nice things about Cam. Like, he's such a hard worker. Like, he's, like, all, like, infusing praise and love over him. It almost makes you think, well, if he did this a little more often with Brady, would Brady still be there?
No, I think he's doing that on purpose because, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm sorry, that's not the Patriot way. Like, it just isn't. And so, it's very Bill Belichick way to do it. With the one player, no one, like, everybody thought, oh, Cam's going to have to come in and do his, he won't be able to do his thing. And Bill Belichick's, oh, no, Brady's out of town now. He can have, what do you want, Cam Newton? Would you like a nice steak dinner every night? Belichick, trust me, regardless, I don't think it ended badly, but trust me, they both want it bad. They want it bad. Belichick wants it just as bad. I mean, Cam's got it. That's why I love the connection between Cam and Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick is out to prove, even though he's already proved it before, technically, but he's out to prove once and for all he's better than Brady, and Brady's doing the exact same thing. No way Brady goes to a team that stacked, even though I know the Bucks weren't like a shiny pick, but freaking Godwin, now he's got Gronk, now he's just stacking the house, he's got Mike Evans, he's stacking the house. Brady has no excuse to not succeed, so it's going to be very interesting. I hate that we don't play this year. Like, that would be the biggest game.
Next year, though, next year, Brady comes back to Gillette, which would be an insanely expensive ticket.
A lot can happen, though. A lot can happen. A lot can happen. We may never get that game.
A lot could happen. You're right. One thing I want to say is, yes, I've been asked, people going, oh, are you a Bucs fan yet? Did you buy your Buccaneers jersey yet? And I say, no, I'm a Patriots fan. And they're like, oh, you only root for the Patriots because of Brady. And I flip that and say, no, I became a New England Patriots fan because of Tom Brady. I have been preparing this. I've been preparing this for the last 10 years when people keep asking me, oh, are you still going to be a fan once Brady leaves? And I say, yes. I have a rug in my room. I have a fat head in my room. I have multiple jerseys, even one, two of them are Brady and Gronkowski, and a Brady Michigan jersey that I bought last year from China. And I still will proudly wear, even though he's not playing this year, I'm going to be proudly wearing my Dante Hightower jersey week one in the game against Miami.
I'm getting me a Gilmore jersey.
I'm going to be getting a Gilmore jersey. I may get a, I don't know about a Cam jersey. I may get a Scherzy, a shirt jersey for Cam.
Jersey, yeah.
Because I don't want to invest in a jersey for 1 year and then he does that. I am probably going to get a Gilmore, though, like you, Phil.
That's my double, my boy. My Gamecock and my Patriot. I mean, how can I not?
Best of both worlds. No, the one thing I just wanted to add in with the Buccaneers quickly, from a fantasy perspective, I honestly see Brady having more success throwing to Godwin than Evans. I think with Evans, you're going to see some miscommunications because who knows if Brady's capable of deep bombs at 43. And the only other thing I want to say is I think Bill Belichick's just a fucking troll at the end of the day. Like, for some of the stuff he does, one thing that comes to mind, and I think both of you will agree with me on this, do you remember last year when Bill Belichick was purposely letting the clock bleed and the Jets kept fucking up, and all you look at the sidelines and you see him just smirking like a complete jackass? That game where Darnold, like, they kicked the Jets' ass 33-0. Do you guys not remember that? Like, was it just me?
Yeah, because that's where people made the irony when Vrabel did what he did in the Titans game.
Yeah.
I think he's a good coach because he just knows that, like, different personalities require different coaching. Like, he knows he has to treat Cam differently than he treated Brady. Like, so that also may be, and, you know, I'm sure he's aware, like, he just signed here in June, COVID offseason, a lot of turmoil. Maybe he's like, okay, I need to raise his confidence a little bit. Let me give him the love that I would not normally give to my traditional quarterback.
Yeah. So I think we've talked about enough AFC East. I just want to run through the AFC quickly. I know we all said Kansas City are bust for the Super Bowl, but what realistic expectations do the two of you have for the Baltimore Ravens to make the Super Bowl this year? Do you think it's plausible, or do you think, like last year, it's going to be a let's wait and see what happens in January, because their first two playoff games, honestly, were complete duds. And I know, and I will always say this, Phil called that on one of the very first episodes of this podcast, and that was like eight months ago.
I picked the Titans to win, and I was I was 100% confident. Wow. I was 100% confident because, and Big Brad, we've done this in years of YouTube take. Like, a hot team like that, when they get the bye, it screws them. And they got two byes because they rested players the last week. And I knew it. I said, this Tennessee team coming off of beating the best dynasty in, like, history is not going to be hyped up for – no, the Ravens are going to get mauled. And, like, I mean, I thought it would be a little closer probably. But, no, and you're asking about this year in the Ravens? I'm completely low on the Ravens, bro. Here's a good example. Mahomes, okay, so he didn't play his rookie year, or he played his, like, he didn't play the majority of his rookie year.
He played only week 17.
So he played and did amazing, right, and went to the AFC Championship game, lost to the Patriots, right? The next year, even though they won last year in the Super Bowl, he was down. As far as just him and his stats, he was down. He had a down year. Not a down year. I mean, when I mean down year for Mahomes.
Not for him.
He was still good, so don't let nobody say, oh, he thinks Mahomes is trash. No, I think Mahomes got dropped down because people saw him and they figured him out a little bit more. But he's still a talented and amazing quarterback, and it showed because he made an amazing run to the Super Bowl. But I think that with Lamar is going to struggle this year because people are going to already know his tendencies. First time seeing him in a full season, they're going to struggle, and I just don't think the Ravens are going to be a true threat. I'm not saying the Ravens don't make the playoffs or nothing like that, but I would not be shocked to see the Ravens not, you know, they're not. I just don't think Lamar is going to be good this year. I see a lot of people drafting him super early. In one of my leagues, literally someone drafted him second. I think, have him. You can take him. I don't want to touch Lamar Jackson this year.
So I have a similar take, but with a different result. I do think they can win the Super Bowl. But I will say, like, they will win it in a different way. It's not go 14-2, win two home games, go to the Super Bowl. I agree they probably will take a step back in terms of how many touchdowns they score, how many games they win, etc. But just like Mahomes, like, yes, like, he doesn't have a good fantasy season. He underperforms a little bit, misses some games. Like, things just don't kind of gel like they did the year before, right? Well, that team won the Super Bowl. Like I kind of, I can kind of see it, like, they go 10-6. It's kind of uglier than it was the year before. His numbers aren't as good. They score less touchdowns. But then once they're in the playoffs, they just kind of do well. Like, I think, look, I think last year, like, it had all those reasons. Also, last year, they got stopped on fourth and short 3 times. And they were, like, the best fourth and short team of all time. Like, part of that is just bad luck. And credit to Tennessee, obviously, for beating them in the trenches in those plays. But the first playoff game especially, like Lamar led 2 touchdown drives in the fourth quarter and had the ball with a chance to win the game against the Chargers until he fumbled. But, like, they came back. They didn't just get their ass kicked. Like, they rallied in the fourth quarter. People forget that he, like, ended the game with, like, 250 yards and 3 touchdowns or something crazy in that first playoff game, because everyone remembers the first half when the offense really struggled. So I think the numbers will take a step back. I do agree that he won't be as good in fantasy as he was last year, and I do think his ADP in fantasy is too high. But I kind of view it as, like, they can go 10-6 and then just kind of in playoffs just, like, win a bunch of ugly games. Like, win a bunch of games where, like, in a very ugly way, because their style of play does translate in terms of, like, their defense being so good. And this team is unlike any other team we've seen. I know we've made this argument, like, with Kaepernick and RG3 before, but I really think it's different. Like, they just, they're different. Like, there's so many, like, he's so fast. And he's still young. He's only 23 years old. Like, there's more that he can grow. It's possible he's a better real-life quarterback, but a much worse fantasy quarterback next year because he improves in certain areas.
That's a good point, too. Yeah.
Their offense, their rushing offense is just so hard to stop. Like, I just think it's, like, they asked Eric Weddle, like, after they destroyed the Rams on Monday Night Football, they asked Eric Weddle, like, why is this team so good? And he said, well, no one can practice this. Like, no one can practice, no one can have their quarterback simulate Lamar in practice. He's so much faster than any other quarterback in the NFL. Like, it's just not the same. And there are so many times where the defense does have the right play call. They do have the linebacker in the right gap to stop him, but Lamar's just too fast, and he outruns him. Like, I do think there is some sustainability to this in the sense of just, like, they're not the same as that 2012 49ers team. Like, their running is even more aggressive than that team's was. Like, I think it translates well to January football. Just because we haven't seen them win a playoff game yet doesn't mean they never will. And, like, Matt Ryan started his career, like, not winning a playoff game the first 4 years of his career. And, like, in historic fashion, like they lost in 2010 as the one seed got blown out by the Packers and Aaron Rodgers at home. So, you know, just because we haven't seen it yet doesn't mean it'll never happen. So I do think it'll be ugly, they'll lose more games, they'll score less touchdowns. I agree with all that. But I do think come January, like, I could see them, like, on the road kind of being frisky in a way like the Titans were last year. Like, their equivalent of Derrick Henry just destroying teams, like them with Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins and Lamar himself running the ball. I can see it, honestly.
I mean, that's a good point. And I think one thing we'll add to that, I think you did amazing on that. Lamar, because he is fast, but he just doesn't have, like, there's still that aspect, and I'm not going to throw it. I mean, he's on the Madden cover, but that's not why I'm saying this, so just let me cover that. Like, he can't, like, he is someone that, like, if he got hit, like, you're going to have to protect him more this year. Like I said, like, that's why I think in fantasy, I think they know that. I think the Ravens know that. So I think they will protect him more. I think they understand that, like, they need to he needs to stay in the pocket sometimes more and things like that. But they're, and use his speed at, like, you know, in the killer moments when they need it the most. But that's why I think in fantasy he'll lose a little bit of luster as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that the Ravens are going to be trash this year. I just think they fall down a little bit. Ingram's another year older as well, and Ingram, if he can't make it through a season, that's going to hurt him as well.
Also, too, I know Big Rat, and I've talked about this before, but I think the loss of Marshall Yanda is going to be noticed quite quickly, because I was looking at their schedule. I know they got Cleveland week one, but they got Houston and Kansas City back-to-back right after that, so they're going to get tested early. The only thing I want to say about this Ravens team, and, like, we're all right with adversity, because if you look at all the last few Super Bowl champions, 2016, I wouldn't say so much for the Patriots, but they lost in November to Seattle, which was kind of like their wake-up call. 2017, you had that Eagles team who had lost Carson Wentz and just lived the underdog mentality. 2018, the Patriots had the Miracle Miami game, and then they had the game against Pittsburgh that they played like shit against. And then last year with Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes out for a good chunk of the year, and then he came back, and when it was the right time in December, he remembered, not remembered how to play football, but they kind of got back into form, and they were scary. So I think always in the NFL lately, you know what? Not because, just if you have 14-2 doesn't mean, oh, you're going to go to the Super Bowl. It's a team who has to, it's not, I'm going to quote Sylvester Stallone, it's not about how hard you can get hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and get back up. That's the team.
If that's not the epitome of what the Chiefs were, I mean, they got hit.
Yeah.
I mean, they were down in every game, so I mean, that is a good
game. And they had Tyreek Hill out for a good portion of the year, too.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
To transition to another team. Big Rob, I'm just interested, I don't know if I've heard you talk about them yet. Maybe you have, guys, have talked about them, but I haven't heard you. But what are your thoughts on the Titans this year? Do you think they keep that momentum, or do you think they fall back? I know you're high on your boy Ryan Tannehill, of course.
I think Tannehill's success is, I think I said this with Griff once before, I don't think his success is fake. I do genuinely think, like, he's really good, and the national media has underrated him for years, because this incompetent Dolphins team did not build a good offensive line, they did not give him good receivers, they did not have good play calling. That's the other thing that no one says. The play calling was really bad. He was set up to fail. And even with all those horrible circumstances, he still put up solid numbers. So I do think he's actually a good quarterback. But I think they take a step back, because his efficiency last year was like Joe Montana. And like, well, I think he's good. I mean, he's not Joe Montana. So that should come back a little bit. I also think, I said this with Griff before, I'm not sure Arthur Smith is as good as people think he is. Like, people view him as, like, this genius offensive coordinator that changed the Titans' offense. There's a lot of Titans beat writers that, if you look at the schematics, there's a lot of plays where no one was open, and Tannehill had to just, like, make a tight window throw or, like, run with his legs. Or, like, you know, like, Derrick Henry was just demolishing teams. It's not like they were super creative schematically or anything like that. So I can see that offense taking a step back, because I think people view him like this offensive mastermind that I don't think is quite deserved. And it's also based on a really small sample. Only like half.
Yeah. And I think the thing you're talking about too is, like, I think I'm not discrediting the Titans team as a whole, but Henry was a huge part. Like, I wanted to see it. I wanted to see the Titans go to the Super Bowl just because of how special Henry's run. Like, not taking anything away from the entire team, because Tannehill did what he needed to do and didn't make mistakes, right? You could say the same thing on the other side. That's what Jimmy Garoppolo literally did until the Super Bowl. So, I mean, you could say that Tannehill was just as good, if not better. So, I think Henry was just so special. But if you look at that, as much as not in the Ravens game, and clearly, you know, in the end in the Kansas City, but in the New England game, We were within 3 points the entire game. Our offense was just that bad. Like, it literally couldn't even get into field goal range to take the lead. So it's like we were within that window for the entire game. So I think that's, you can't have that with most teams, which they proved. Obviously, they were able to beat the Ravens, but they couldn't do that with Kansas City. They had the lead, the same kind of lead they had against us, but Kansas City had the offense to where, all right, eventually we're going to come at you. And that's what happened. And so I think that's the thing that I'm struggling with, to see where I think the Titans will be next year. Because I think Henry's still a beast, but at the same time, if Tannehill has to almost keep that up in order, because, like, that's the thing. Like, when Henry did his thing, and then all of a sudden, well, now you need Tannehill to make a throw, whether it was Tannehill or the offensive play calling or whatever, like, him and Brown was doing pretty good in the season, but you never really saw them in the playoffs. You didn't really see anything, you know, so it's like, you know, outside, I think, a little bit in the past game, you know, Tannehill made a couple good throws there, but from my memory right now. But, like, yeah, so I was just intrigued to see what you thought about the Titans, because I'm not sure. I'm honestly, if I'm being honest, I don't know. I think the obvious thing would be, yeah, take a step back, because you just don't think. But I don't know. I would love to see them keep doing good, because Mike Vrabel is my boy. I mean, you're talking about Patriots fan or not, that was one of my favorite Patriots of all time. So, yeah, like, it hurt me that we lost, but to see that guy succeed was like, okay, at least if our loss had to come at the expense of that, because I'd love for them to keep doing better. I don't know. Like I said, I think what Big Red made some great points, and I think that it's just going to be hard in the league, especially with a league that's going towards, I mean, even though whether Cam's on his top level or not, you have Cam, you have Lamar Jackson, and you have Mahomes. It just seems like where it's going. You got Russell Wilson on the other side. You know, it's like you just see where it's kind of going, and it's going to be kind of difficult to run a different. But it'd be good to see as well, because you need diversity. So we'll see.
I agree with Big Rat. Yes, he has said the stuff about Ryan Tannehill before on the podcast. I think both episodes that he was on back in June and July. I think that the Titans are still going to be that team like last year where, you know what, they're like that 9-7, 8-8, knocking on the door kind of thing. Either they're the sixth or seventh wild card team, or they're just on the outside looking in. That's only because, and I have said this before, I have a completely different team winning the AFC South this year. I think the Indianapolis Colts win the division. I also can make a strong case for, I think there's an outside shot the Indianapolis Colts could potentially make the Super Bowl this year. Like, they go in and they shock some people. I only say this because, look, they have a great defense that they added DeForest Buckner to. Like, they just got him for basically a first-round pick. I don't know what the full details of the deal are, but they got him. Phillip Rivers pretty much is in a now-or-never year. Like, he is determined to get that ring. They added Jonathan Taylor, who was a stud at Wisconsin at running back. You got Paris Campbell. You got T.Y. Hilton, a receiver. You've got one of the best offensive lines in football. So that's just only my take about it. I only say that, too, because I think, for all intents and purposes, I think Jacksonville's going to be terrible this year. Do I think they tank? No. Do I think that they're going to be bad and Doug Marrone potentially loses his job or probably loses his job? Yes. And then you all know my thoughts on the Houston Texans. I've gone off about them a bunch. I still think them trading away DeAndre Hopkins is one of the stupidest things ever. Their secondary still doesn't impress me. And two, they have their probably the most injury-prone wide receiver core in the NFL with Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller, who Cooks, has, we all know, has his concussion issues, and Will Fuller can either make or break a fantasy. Like, one week he'll have 35 points, and then the next week he has 2 points, and he goes out with a shoulder injury for 2 weeks. That's my opinion on the AFC South.
You know what, Griff, about them Texans? That would not shock me if they were trash this year. Make another fantasy reference. I have stayed clear. I actually took Brady over Watson in one of my leagues because I don't want to touch Watson this year. Like, I just do not trust that Houston team at all. You take away his one, like, stud receiver, it's going to just – I just think it's going to trickle down. And I don't know what the hell Bill O'Brien's doing right now, to be completely honest. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Maybe they prove me wrong, but and you made some good – points about the Colts. I haven't really looked that much into the Colts, outside of Rivers and stuff, so I don't know if I agree with you on that part, but I would not be shocked if I saw the Colts finish second in this division. I will say that.
The only thing I want to say about the Houston Texans quickly is that for some reason, too, they think we're going to get 2016-2017 David Johnson back for some reason. I don't know why, but like I said, Houston, prove me wrong. Big Rat?
Yeah, I think that the Colts, they're really well coached is the thing. Like, I do, like, give Frank Reich a little bit more credit than I think most other people do. So that's why I would, like, say very nice things about them. But I also think that the Colts, their defense is underrated. Like, it's just they played better towards the end of last year. The way Darius Leonard was playing, like, it was a really, really good defense towards the end. That I do think that Phillip Rivers, even if physically, like, he doesn't have the same things that he used to have, just mentally, like, he's going to know when to check out a play. He's going to know when the first read is. And I saw a Colts writer say that in a Frank Reich offense, it's very QB-friendly. Like, the first read is almost always open. For someone like Phillip Rivers, who will know where to go with the ball and who has, like, arm strength concerns, I think that can really mitigate his flaws. So, yeah, I'm with Griff on this one. I don't know if they're going to be a Super Bowl threat, but I can totally see them winning that division. It wouldn't be that surprising. They probably have the best coach. They don't have the best quarterback, but they have the best coach, and they might have the best balanced team. So, yeah, that's all it would take.
And also, too, just to my point, I'm not saying they're going to go out there and they're going to win the Super Bowl. I'm just saying, like, look, if I had to have a dark horse pick that wasn't Kansas City, Baltimore, or because of bias reasons, New England, make it to the Super Bowl, I'll take the Colts. The only other team I want to say that, if healthy this year, they can make some noise is Pittsburgh. I've gone on record by saying that before. If Ben is back and Ben is healthy with that defense, and also, too, we'll see how James Conner, Deontay Johnson, we'll see how Juju, shout out Canada, Chase Claypool from Notre Dame, and two, they got Eric Ebron. I know with the Colts he didn't have the most miraculous career, but in a guy like that with a bounce back season. And also, too, that's the other thing, too. Mike Tomlin's a very good coach in the NFL who has a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, and he's people are kind of forgetting like how good that core was before this past year. So yeah, if he's healthy, like absolutely.
Don't get me started on Mike Tomlin being the most overrated coach in football, but we don't have no time for that.
And quickly with I just want to quickly.
Credit for last year, though. You got to give him credit for last year.
I have given him credit for last year. I will say that he pulled way more than he should have ever. And I do, as I'm saying that, I do expect the Steelers to be a lot better this year. I just think Mike Tomlin people like to hail him as one of the best in the league. And to me, he's way more of a player's coach and hasn't done nearly as much as he should have done.
That's just because you guys are Patriots fans. And I know you're not saying this, Griff, but like you guys as Patriots fans have this problem where Bill Belichick always destroys Mike Tomlin. So you see this routinely, and it makes you guys, oh, why is this guy so good? Like they keep losing by 20 points or whatever every time they play. But he's done good things outside of those matches.
They beat us the last time they played us.
Last time we played them was week one of last year. I remember going into it thinking, hey, this is going to be a pretty close competitive game because like we had the last two week 15 games that were really close, including that Jesse James, that was a drop week 15, which
I was trying to think of what Steelers game I'm thinking of, but
you're thinking of 2018.
The one I'm thinking of is 2018. You probably remember that one, Big Red. It was in the prime slot for CBS, and I remember Jesse James had it, then the play got reversed, and I think it was actually Eric Rowe or Daron Harmon, one of the two, who got an interception on like one of the next two plays, and then the Patriots won the game. I was expecting that. So for when the Patriots beat them 33-3, part of me was like, and midway through the third quarter, I'm like, okay, who is this Pittsburgh team right now? Because they weren't looking good. But like, that's why this year, too, I just think like, hey, if they stay healthy, I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, and also, too, with Mike Tomlin, I'm not saying, like, oh, he's this, like, overrated coach. I'm not saying either, well, he's a great coach. He's a good coach. He's got a Super Bowl ring for a reason. And also, too, that's the other thing as well. Pittsburgh is probably one of the best-run organizations in the NFL, considering they've gone through, I think, three or four coaches within the last 50 years with Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and now Mike Tomlin. All of them retiring after they won Super Bowl. So that's only one thing I got to say, which shout out to the Rooney family. And let's not forget, they have one of the best defensive players in the league in TJ Watt. So I'm not saying, like I said before, I'm not saying Pittsburgh's going to be there, but I think at worst case scenario, Pittsburgh's a wild card team this year.
I do think they're a lot better this year. I will say that. I'm just not high on Tomlin. I'm sorry. Just not high on him at all. I think he gets overhyped. I think he inherited Cowher's team, and it's just been downhill ever since. But that's just me. Even though last year, I will say, Big Red did call. I'm glad he called me out on that because I do agree. I do think he pulled out a rabbit out of the hat last year, doing a lot better than they could have been a lot worse.
Exactly, considering they had Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph at quarterback. I want to talk about the AFC West very quickly, just because we honestly have been talking for quite a while now. But because we all know Kansas City's going to win the division more than likely, unless Patrick Mahomes for some reason. Probably couldn't hear that, but I was knocking on wood, gets hurt, because honestly, that's the one thing I want to mention quickly, is this year with no preseason, I have a really bad feeling you're going to see someone have a torn ACL, or like you're going to see it happen more than once week one. I just have a bad feeling. I hope it doesn't happen. I don't wish for any player to get hurt, no matter how much I like or how much I dislike them. You don't wish ill will on another player, especially in the NFL. I just think, too, like how you see, like for example, how Edelman tore his ACL in that game against Detroit in a preseason game 2 years ago, Phil. But I will say this, the NFC West is just intriguing because I have a feeling the teams in there could either make some noise or be completely garbage. I think there's like the ceiling's not high, but the floor is very low for them. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the Raiders, I mean, even though the Raiders just lost Tyrell Williams, but my boy Bryan Edwards going to get a step up because of that. And my boy Hunter Renfrow. I think the Raiders makes a little bit of noise. Not a lot of noise, but I think the Raiders could do, if they can finally get it all together, I think they could be very good this year.
I think the Raiders, and then this is going to sound bad, but I think they profile most to last year's Titans. And look, I'm not saying they're going to make the AFC title game. And remember also, last year, if you would have said the Titans are going to make the AFC title game, most people would have laughed at you.
They laughed at you. That's true.
So, here's why I say it, because I think they're well coached. I know Gruden has become like this meme, like on the NFL Twitter and all that, but I think he is a good coach. I think they've done a good job. They get better every year. The defense is going to be a lot better. They completely changed their linebacker core. They brought in Nick Kwiatkowski from the Bears. They got Corey Littleton from the Rams. They just got Raekwon McMillan from my Dolphins. And I can tell you guys, McMillan, not good in coverage, but one of the best run-defending linebackers in the NFL. Like, he will help. He will make an impact. So they get Jonathan Abram back in the secondary. They drafted Damon Arnette. Like, their D-line with Crosby, Max Crosby, had a really good year last year. Cleveland Farrell, not so much, but he was a top five pick. You do think he could improve and grow and give you more production there. Like, their defense, I'm not saying it's going to be good, but it could be average this year. And their offense, very quietly last year, was like top 15 on the season. Like, it wasn't flashy. It was won through a lot of run game, check down screens from Carr. Like, I'm not a big Carr fan because he doesn't really make big throws down the field. He always seems to get scared and take the easy options in the short game. But they do have the same quarterback situation that the Titans did last year. And I know it's like the lazy comparison, but I think there's something to it. They did not just give Mariota like a 1-year contract. They gave him like his contract. He's the highest paid backup quarterback in the NFL. And his contract has escalators that could pay him up to $40 million. They didn't put that in. That's not common. That's not like, hey, if you have to start 16 games for us, we'll make sure you get paid. Other teams don't do that. You do that if you think maybe there's a chance he comes in. I'm of the opinion that Mariota, while maybe not a difference maker, is a little bit better than he's given credit for. I think those Mike Mularkey, especially the 2017 Mike Mularkey Titans team, I think that was a very poorly designed offense. It was very slow. The receivers couldn't get separation. Before AJ, remember, Mariota never really got to play with AJ Brown in his prime. He only had that for like four games. Before that, they were relying on Corey Davis as their number one receiver, which is not a fit for him. So I think he was often blamed for a lot of the Titans' problems that I don't think were all his fault, because we've seen him have great games. He kicked the Patriots' ass in 2018. Like, destroyed them, like, in Tennessee. It was ridiculous. That Patriots team that won the Super Bowl, Mariota destroyed them. Like, I just think I don't think he's as good as Tannehill, but I do think, like Tannehill, he gets too much blame for mistakes his organization made. Guys, Mike Mularkey got them to the second round of the playoffs and got fired. You never see that. That's how bad the GM must think of him. For the GM to be, yeah, you won a playoff game, but if you don't make changes, we're going to fire you. Like, that's ridiculous. So I just think that he deserves some credit. I think Derek Carr, it's not that he'd start week one, but it could be a thing like the Raiders start slow. They start 2-4 or something like that. And then they just make a switch, because why not? And, you know, they have the quarterback parallel that the Titans do. They did get improvements on defense. They do have a lot of continuity. And like the Titans bring in A.J. Brown, right, as a rookie, made a big impact on their offense. They bring in Henry Ruggs and now Bryan Edwards, who I think is going to start now that Tyrell Williams is on IR. So, like, I just think there's a lot of parallels there. And they also have a really good O-line like the Titans did. Like, again, I'm not saying it will happen.
Don't forget Darren Waller.
And Jason Witten. And Jason Witten, even though he's like 55.
Jason Witten on the Raiders?
Yeah.
He gets the locker room presence and all that stuff. But yeah, I think he's better than people. They just, as you can see, there's similarities. There's similarities with them that there were with the Titans. That doesn't mean it'll end up the same way, but they have kind of all the pieces. They have like the running back that they want to grind into the ground. They have the rookie receivers making a big impact. They have the new faces on defense that can turn the defense around. They have a good coach. They have a quarterback who was much maligned for most of his career that might, in a second chance in a new environment, might have a chance to really blossom. So I just think all the pieces fit.
Even though you're saying that, I like Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr has a good year. I think Derek Carr proves this. Well, this is the year. Either he proves he's good or he doesn't. He gets benched, and Mariota will play, and then they'll end up probably drafting somebody. But I don't know. I think Derek Carr can get it done.
I do agree though with Phil. I do think though if Derek Carr doesn't get it done this year, I don't think he is in a Raiders uniform come 2021. But at the same time, too, Mike Mayock's done a very good job as GM. I'm not criticizing the Raiders when I say like their ceiling's not very high, but the floor is really low. I also do like the Nick. I can't say his last name. from the Bears, the linebacker.
Kwiatkowski.
What was it?
I think it's Nick Kwiatkowski.
Kwiatkowski. I love that addition because I think that's going to be a loss for the Bears. I really like that addition. Corey Littleton, Max Crosby, too, who came out of nowhere last year, is one of the best rookie defensive linemen in the league.
He had 10 sacks.
Yeah.
He was active.
The Raiders, you know what? Like, I know you guys don't watch a lot of hockey, but they're kind of like the Golden Knights that first year where it's just like they're a band of misfits. Like, they got – and it's a similar thing, too, where it's like the Jets – hey, they got nothing to lose. Like, and if they can go, like, I think last year their record was like 6-10. The only two quick things I'm going to say off topic is I think the Broncos are going to see some growing pains this year, and the Chargers, who really knows what's going to go on there, even though they unfortunately lost Derwin James. But the Raiders, I think, have potential to be, like I said, I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but I think they'd be that disruptive team in December that costs the team some playoffs. Like, I remember, and Big Rat's going to hate me for this, but I remember an example of a few years ago when the Patriots lost to the Dolphins in Miami, went to Buffalo in a must-win game, and lost like 21-0. I think like that is like when you have a team in that must-win situation and playing, I don't know what the Raiders' schedule is, but I have a feeling they're going to have a similar situation like that where a team goes to Vegas or they go somewhere else, and then the Raiders win that game when a team has to win.
Yeah, where you... Someone else makes them blunt. Someone else screws up, and it creates an opening for another. Yeah.
Exactly. Quickly before we go, because like I said, we're coming up on 2 hours actually, and I probably have to get off soon because I imagine most people in my house are going to sleep. Do you guys agree with the Raiders? Not the Raiders. The Broncos and the Chargers takes where it's kind of like Chargers. Like I think Broncos, like, they have potential. I just think, like I said, I think there'll be growing pains with Locke, but him and Shermer is an interesting combo.
I'm a fan. They're also kind of a wide range team though. Like, they could be really good, they could be bad. Like, we only saw Locke play for 5 games. Like, we don't. Geno Smith had a good 5-game stretch in his career. Like, we see quarterbacks have good 5-game stretches, and then like Jacoby Brissett, I believe after week 5 last year, led the NFL in touchdown passes.
I think so. Yeah.
And then look how that ended up. They beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead and everything. Like, you would think, oh, this is a Super Bowl team. It's just. So I just think the sample is really small, but I do think they can do really, really well. Not denying that.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to say, too, is about that stupid Chiefs-Colts game is that cost me my survival pool.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you picked the Chiefs that week?
Yeah, I picked the Chiefs.
I picked 2 years ago. I picked the Packers. I had been saving them all year because I thought in Lambeau Field they would be such money.
Oh, the Cardinals game.
The Cardinals game that Mike McCarthy got fired, where they were like 17-point favorites, I saved them, and I circled that game like 4 weeks in advance. I was like, that's when I'm picking Green Bay, and they lost, and yeah, it was terrible.
So do you think, when it comes to the Chargers, do you think that Tyrod starts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, obviously he's gonna start. I think he's going to start, but do you think he starts only a couple of games and they bring in Herbert, or you just think they kind of ride Tyrod and bring in Herbert once the season's kind of done?
Well, I don't think that for a quarterback change to happen, you need to lose. Like, even if a quarterback's playing bad, if a team's 7-1, they don't make a change. Right. So, that Derwin James injury is really awful. Like, I followed Derwin James went to FSU. As a Canes fan, I followed his career for a long time. Like, he's a super stud. It's a real shame that he's gotten hurt major injuries 2 years in a row. But I still think that Chargers defense has a chance to be a top 5 defense in the league. They just have a lot of talent. So, if they have, remember, they got Chris Harris in the offseason. They already had Casey Hayward, like, with Ingram and Bosa and Denzel Perryman from the U. Like, they got a lot of really good players. So it could be kind of a thing where, like, they're a really good defense and kind of like a mediocre offense, kind of like Alex Smith-era Chiefs, you know, like the 2016 Chiefs that, like, were, like, solid offensively but great defensively. Like, and if they're like that and they're 5-3 by midseason, I don't think they're going to make a change. So I think Tyrod could be in there for a little while, to be honest.
They also added in Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma in the draft, and also Linval Joseph. They also did make some good adjustments to their offensive line with, like, Brian Bulaga, Trey Turner from Carolina. I'm just looking at their depth chart right here. Just looking at it here, the other big thing, too, is I've got to wonder what kind of year Austin Eckler is going to have now that he's the main workhorse in L.A. One other point, too, I want to make quickly about the AFC before we go is I think, too, Baltimore also will struggle with the fact, because remember last year they had that three-headed monster at tight end? I think Mark Andrews is going to have a good year, but They lost Phil's boy to Atlanta, Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, they lost my boy that I'm super high on. Come on, Matt Ryan. I need you to throw to Hayden Hurst all the time. I'm 2-for-2 in drafts right now with him. And I'm huge on Hayden Hurst this year. But yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they need to trade him. They never using Andrews. And I mean, they didn't need all three of them, but
and Boyle.
I think Hurst has a big year in Atlanta. And enough, not to keep, we could go on and on and on about this, but I'll watch the NFC South, man. Atlanta, I don't know. It seems like Atlanta's always good when no one expects them to be good. When everyone expects them to be good, they're trash. So I could just see Atlanta just being like, oh, y'all were worried about the Bucks and the New Orleans? We're over here. You know, it's like, I don't think they win the division or nothing like that, but I think they could make some noise.
And they drafted two offensive linemen in the first round last year in Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry. And one of them didn't play, the other played and didn't play well. Like, if they just, like, become first-round quality offensive linemen, I mean, their biggest problem is pass protection. Like, if they can become first-round quality offensive linemen, you know, then you're cooking with something there. That's pretty interesting.
Exactly. And the only other thing I want to say quickly, too, is I think Cincinnati has a year where they're in the top five of the draft again, and I think Cleveland is kind of in that Denver and L.A. situation where they could either surprise some people or they could suck again like last year.
Cleveland?
I think,
yeah, Cleveland.
I was going to say, I think you're right. I don't think Cincinnati has the overall team to do good, but I do think Burrow and Higgins are gonna make some noise this year. I mean, I think offensively, I don't think the team in a whole, but I think Burrow's going to look good. I think he really is.
I think he's going to look like how Kyler Murray looked last year, where you know what, he has some flashes.
I told people, even as a Gamecock fan, like Higgins is possibly the best receiver coming out of that draft. I will still stand by that.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, he's a stud.
He just had a really bad championship game, and people are starting to like forget about him. But I think Higgins with Burroughs could be huge for Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Very big building piece, let's put it that way.
Exactly. But anyway, guys, we've been here. We've taken up way too much of your time today. But you know what? It was a preview show for a reason. Fellas, I can't thank you enough. Both of you guys are going to be on multiple times throughout the season to talk. Because just to let you guys know right now, my plan for the season is I'm always going to, and for all you listeners, I'm going to record twice a week. I want to do 1 week where we go in-depth with recaps, and then do the next week of preview. So that starts next. So next week, two episodes start where I'm going to have the NFC prediction show, which I'm going to get a couple people from who are NFC fans, like how we all are AFC. I'm going to get some NFC people in here. Let's talk about that division. And then after that, week 1 through week 17, it's always going to be a results show. It's always going to be a preview show. And like I say, we're so close we can taste it, fellas.
Also, week away, that's insane.
Good luck in week 1. I, as a fellow Patriots fan now, I probably won't be that game in particular, but all the other games, sure.
Week 1 and week 15, we're enemies. Besides that, we're the best of friends. Well, fellas, right. Thank you very much for coming on, guys. That's it for episode 22, guys. We'll see you next week with the NFC preview show. Good night and stay safe. Keep wearing your masks and keep social distancing. Good night for now.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.